Well, hello again, everybody in Turdville. It's another week, and it is another special Access to Access edition of the TFMR podcast. Today, given everything that's going on in the world and all of the attention that we are paying to the backwardation in the gold markets with the negative go-fill rates that have persisted now for a month, I thought the best thing I could do, the best guest I could bring in would be Sandeep Jaitly. Recall, we spoke with him back in February. And we talked about backwardation back at the time, and I thought, wow, we got to get Sandeep back in here. Sandeep, again, is the founder and secretary of Facetta Research. He works hand-in-hand with Dr. Antal Facetta in London. He's also an investment manager and strategist at the First International Group in London, where he runs a physical gold and silver fund. Sandeep, welcome back to Turdville. How you doing? Everything going okay over there?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Well, thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us and giving us your perspective. Like I said, we talked back in February about this persistent backwardation you were seeing of cash versus the front month futures contract. Mm. We're continuing to see that, and now we've got this negative GOFO situation that's been going on now for over a month. What do you see in the gold market over there, and how are you measuring the backwardation these days? What do you see?
Well, the December contract became the largest open interest, the largest contract by open interest a couple of last week or so. And as soon as that occurred, it moved into backwardation. So you're seeing a backwardation there of around 75 cents on a gross basis, which is about 20 basis points, 18 basis points annualized. Mm-hmm. So that, again, is sort of unprecedented. If you look over the past sort of 4 years and look at the December contract sort of this time, from this time in summer into the end of the year, you know, the December contract has never been in the, at this stage, at this level of backwardation this early before.
In August.
It's still the beginning of August. So that is still what was occurring in February is still there in the market, and it's getting higher. You know, so it's not going away. And then obviously what you had, as you mentioned, since February, was the over the counter measure of the gold forward rate becoming negative. So we've had that for nearly sort of a month now. Yep. That it's been negative. Of course, this is completely unprecedented. You know, there's absolutely no precedence for GOFO being negative for this long. And when you look at the explanations as to why this is occurring, sort of they do tend to be fairly pedestrian, you know.
And please go into that a little bit. Explain for everybody listening where that analysis is kind of coming up short.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that a lot of people have, intelligent people as well, have been saying about gold and silver futures is that the whole curve has to be in backwardation, and they sort of compare it to oil and wheat or whatever, and they say that's proper backwardation. Okay, now that is, as far as I and Facetta are concerned, the most pedestrian form of analysis. You know, because gold and silver have, to all intents and purposes, constant marginal utility. You know, they're not like oil or wheat or any of those other commodities. So that's for one. For two, if you look at the percentage of open interest in the first three contracts for gold and silver, it's always between 80 and 90%, roughly.
Right.
You know, so the far-dated contracts, the far-dated COMEX contracts, never have more than 10% of outstanding open interest.
Combined.
You know,
combined.
You know, yeah. So I'm not saying that those far dated contracts won't move into a backwardation, but if you're waiting for that to happen, that a lot more exciting things will have happened in the gold market before that happens, you know. Those far-dated contracts are just basically dealer fudges. You know, they wish that they could trade at those rates.
Right.
You know, they wish that people would roll out their contracts to 2015, to 2016.
Sure they do.
You know, but they won't. The nature of owning gold and silver futures is that you either own physical gold or you own gold futures. You know, you don't sort of make the choice of buying a far-dated contract at a premium, you know, because these things are still at a premium, you know. So it's not the way the gold and silver futures markets work, you know. The people that are interested in gold and silver futures are only interested in playing around the first three contracts, you know.
Exactly.
And that's always been the case. And it always will be the case, unless they've been bribed to move out along the curve, you know.
Well, and to your point, as of the numbers yesterday, of the 393,000 contracts of open interest on the COMEX, 271,000 are in just the October and the December.
Yeah.
So more than two-thirds is just in those two. And so these folks that try to say, well, it's not on the whole board – in gold, it's just the first couple of months that matter.
Exactly, you know, and it's you know, I've read some quite lengthy pieces going on to what they think of what they think backwardation should be. You know, I mean, well, you know, that's all very good and pat on the back, you know, but it's a not a sufficient analysis as far as we're concerned, you know.
And let's go back to GoFo for a second, because it's not really a chicken and egg type thing. What we are seeing with the negative GOFO rates that have now almost seem like have just become a constant fixture in the market, that is because of what this backwardation, this is a logical extension of the persistent backwardation you've been seeing now for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, what it's signifying is that, and I think that it was a French bank that was the only commentary, sort of standard commentary that I saw, which actually got the nail on the head, was that this can only signify that someone is in trouble, and I'll explain what that means in a moment, or miners are hedging, in which case they're bidding up the lease rate above fiat interest rates, you know, because they want to hedge against any sort of further potential price falls, you know. So I checked with all of sort of the mining companies themselves in a lot of cases, you know, as well as the analysts, you know, very few of them are hedging. None of them are hedging to all intents and purposes. You know, they're not borrowing physical gold or silver to hedge their production. You know, so that is not the reason that lease rates are being bid up. Now, when the other choice was being in trouble, you know, so what does that mean? All that means is that someone has written gold obligations and now they need to find the gold to settle them. Now, people were willing to hold those gold obligations in dollar terms. For example, what I mean by that is, for example, if you hold a gold future, you don't hold physical gold. You know, you hold a gold obligation traded against fiat dollars, you know. And all other things being equal, you have the choice at expiry to settle that in cash gold, you know. But in the interim, it's a dollar instrument, but a gold obligation. Now, as more and more people want to exchange out of dollars into gold, it calls the integrity of gold obligations into question, you know. And it's not a case of the gold not being there. You know, it might be a case of the gold has just been lent out for a very long period, in which case the bullion dealer might have sort of a five-year gold lease on their book, you know, in which case they have to wait 5 years for that gold to come back. Now, if they are seeing obligations come through, you know, at a rate which would cause them to panic, you know, certainly within 5 years, then they will basically borrow bullion on a shorter term basis,
right?
You know, bidding up the lease rate, you know. And that liability will be offset against their five-year lease, which they still have on their books. So they've borrowed gold for 2 years, but they have a five-year lease on their books or something, you know. So that's the only other explanation, basically. You know, it's that they don't, whether it be futures or forwards, they're not willing to roll over their position and keep it in exchange against dollars. Because they're actually worried, even though they might not see it that way, they're worried about the direct exchange of dollars against gold whittling away, you know, and not being sort of suitable for requirements.
In either way, as you phrased it there and laid it out, it is truly a reflection of physical demand, or at least an unwillingness to convert gold into dollars.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way of saying it. An unwillingness of converting gold into dollars. Oh, well, it's an unwillingness of holding a gold obligation in dollars, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they want the gold. And you've seen all of these Dutch banks recently, well, I say all, there are only two, but closing all of their allocated gold accounts and saying, you know, you have to take cash settlement. We don't want your custom, and you have to take cash settlement. Now, that's a default in my book.
Yes.
And it's only because you can exchange, you know, euros for gold or whatever that those people haven't complained, probably, you know. But at some point, you know, you just have to take it to its logical conclusion, you know, that closing allocated gold accounts at a big bank is just a variation on not being able to exchange fiat currency for gold.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You know, it's just a variation on the same thing, you know, except in a different sort of stratosphere.
Well, let's talk about then where this is ultimately headed. It's unless something dramatic happens, you know, or we wake up one morning and there's some new gold-backed reserve currency that, you know, upsets the apple cart, but that's probably not happening in the next week or two. So this continues to be a somewhat slow motion progress process that reveals itself in stages. It was the backwardation that you've been talking about for quite some time, which was then followed up by this new normal of negative GOFO rates. We're moving toward, ultimately, it would seem, some type of a failure of the futures market for gold and I guess silver too, and that a failure in that this gap just continues to widen where anybody is willing to exchange their physical for a piece of paper. Isn't that where we're headed, I guess, Sandeep?
Well, it's too early to say when the futures market will default.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because, you know, all of those COMEX inventories, they exist within a wider context of non-COMEX inventories, you know. So, you, for example, you've seen sort of over the past year gold draining from COMEX, but silver has been arriving at COMEX, you know.
Right.
So I think that what you're going to see sort of happen maybe a few times before default is gold coming to the exchange again, you know, because it has to. Otherwise, the futures exchange will close by December.
Well, and I didn't want to imply that this was imminent. This is just an ongoing kind of slow motion.
Yes, it's sort of like a slow burn kind of thing, you know. So I think you will actually see gold from outside the system come into the COMEX, from outside of the COMEX system come into the COMEX system.
Okay.
And what you'll see is silver within the COMEX system leaving the COMEX system, you know. But just because gold is arriving at the COMEX system doesn't mean that the exchange against dollars is going to fall. You know, it just means that it's basically they're getting it out of the woodwork as much as they can in order to settle all of these obligations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these bullion bankers are paying through the nose to borrow this gold, you know. And it's not something that they would be doing unless they were very, very worried,
right,
you know.
What would the world look like in the end, Sandeep, once if there is no futures market, if we're in a cash physical only, what would the world look
like? Well, I haven't figured it out, Ted. What we should sort of bear in mind is that, you know, when you buy and sell gold in India at the shop, for example, you know, which is where the largest, if you want to think about which country do they actually have gold and fiat currency in the palm of their hand most often, it's in India.
Right.
You know, but the way that gold is priced in the retail market in India, you know, is by looking at the international price. And especially the gold fix, you know. Now, you know, if there's no gold futures market, then it will be a short matter of time before there could be no gold fixing, you know. And if there's no gold fixing, there's no reference for all of this local currency trading against gold in India. It just makes me think, you know, the conclusion from that is, well, what do you mean? Are you saying that Indian jewelers will not offer gold for rupees? Well, maybe they won't. It has to be something else. You know, there's nothing that says they have to offer it for rupees.
Mm, yeah.
You know, so the whole point about it, it's like, and curiously at that stage, you know, it's the rupee that's likely to lose a lot more value than the dollar is. It's sort of like the rupee only had value because you could exchange it for dollars and you could exchange dollars for gold, you know. So all of these people, again, on a side point here completely, you know, talking about dollar Armageddon and all of that. Well, I actually think the dollar's the last currency that's going to die. It will die, you know, but it's going to be the last one. You know, all of those other peripheral euros and sterlings and yens, they will have all failed sort of well beforehand, you know.
Yeah, that's logical, I suppose, yeah.
You know, but no one thinks like that, so I don't say it very often, you know.
All right, well, Sandy, I wanted one last question to just address. You know, I've gotten quite a few emails, quite a few comments through the site about whether if the LBMA was still printing a SIFO rate. Because as most folks know, they kind of decided just off the cuff back in early November last year to just stop printing SIFO, which is the silver forward rate for those listening. Yep. If we've got the gold forward rate, then we have the silver forward rate. And so I've gotten a lot of feedback and questions from folks saying, if the LBMA was still printing SIFO, would it be negative just like how the gold forward is negative? Well, I know they are still printing it, and I've been told by a friend of mine that it's what they print is still positive. In fact, it hardly changed for the last 90 days. But I wanted to get your opinion on that, because obviously if gold is an extension of gold backwardation, then what do you see in silver, Sandy?
Well, I mean, exactly the same thing. You know, September silver is currently the active contract, but we're rolling into the December contract at the moment. So September is in backwardation of 1.2% annualized, something like that. So it's only a matter of a couple of weeks before December silver moves into backwardation, you know. And December is still a while off, you know. So I think that within a couple of weeks, I don't get those SIFO figures. You know, I don't bother paying the money for that.
Right.
You know, but I imagine that within a couple of weeks, those will become negative as well. And you know, I can give the, you see, the difference between calculating with the futures market and calculating with the forward market is that I can calculate what the 3-month SIFO rate would exactly be 63 days before the December expiry, you know, because that's 3 months before the December expiry. And on that day and that day only, I can say this is what SIFO equivalently would be, because SIFO is a 3-month measure, or whatever maturity you look at. It's always forward, 3 months, 6 months forward, you know, whereas a future has an expiry fixed in time, you know.
Right.
So it will be a matter of a couple of weeks, you know, before SIFO becomes negative, and then they won't be able to hide it.
Yeah. So if I would say there's probably some question as to whether the data that they're putting out and calling it SIFO is even accurate at this point. If you're
probably
seeing,
not.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. So it, because you're seeing the same similar backwardation in silver that we talked about in February and even before then.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed. And so thus, if now GOFO is negative, a true SIFO would likely be negative too.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's fair to say. All right.
It's going to be very exciting over the next month or so.
It certainly seems that way, doesn't it? It looks like we all might want to be paying particular attention in the weeks and months ahead. It certainly doesn't appear to be trending towards boring.
No.
Sandy, you have a newsletter called the Gold Basis Service.
Yes.
Right? If you would, tell everybody at least a little bit about that, and I'll put a link here if people that want to go check it out. What do you write about in the basis service, and how often does it come out?
That is a I founded that service in 2010, and it's a monthly publication. I basically talk about what's been happening in the gold and silver basis. And what the implication means for the month ahead, and with that, there's a quarterly broader general called the course of the exchange, and it's all tied around the economics of Karl Menger somehow, so the true and first Austrian economist, and that's a quarterly publication. So the basis service is basically monitoring exactly what we were just talking about, the true measure of, because at the end of the day, GOFO is not a, just like LIBOR, is not a market-derived observation, you know.
Right.
So the gold basis service is looking at the futures market only, market-derived observations, for the gold and silver bases. And if anything happens between publications in the gold and silver bases, I will write about that as well, you know. So that's only if something has happened, you know. So at the moment, you know, it's pretty much one way in terms of the backwardation, you know. So there haven't been many intra-month updates, but there are plenty of old articles on fekatoresearch.com, you know. Anyone that's interested, have a look through there. And if they want to ask me anything, my email is there as well. So I'm more than approachable.
Yes, you are. And very generous with your time. And I can't tell you how beneficial it is for all of us here in Turdville to get a chance to hear from you directly. So thank you very much on behalf of everyone. And I suspect we might want to visit again as we move, you know, towards or into the fourth quarter. So hopefully we'll speak again soon. But for now, thank you, Sandy, very, very much.
Thanks, Seth.
All right. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks.